You're listening to The Recovered Life Show, the show that helps people in recovery live their best recovered lives. And here is your host, Damon Frank.
And welcome back to The Recovered Life Show. Today is our special St. Patrick's Day episode. So welcome. Thank you so much for joining us. We're going to keep it green today and sober, and we're going to dive into how to stay sober during St. Patrick's Day and also have fun doing it. I'd like to welcome our guests to the show. First up, we've got Kevin O'Malley joining us. Kevin's not just any guest. He's got some serious chops in long-term sobriety and is super active in 12-step groups. But that's not all. He's also the founder of Tech Talk Studio, a whiz in PR and business consulting. Welcome to the show, Kevin.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Glad to have you, first time on the show, and welcome. No discussion, guys, would be complete without some expert insight. And that's where Sean Ostendorf comes in. He's back with us today on the Recovered Life Show. Sean's the brains behind Heart and Solutions, a therapy practice that's making waves in Waterloo, Iowa. Glad to have you back on the show, Sean.
Yeah, you bet. Thanks so much for having me again.
Thank you for joining us. And, you know, to make sure, guys, St. Patrick's Day is complete, we have got the Sober Spectacular, Rachel Heckman, joining us again on the show. Rachel is the magic behind Sober in Central Park and an incredible alcohol-free sober coach all the way from New York City. She's here to show us how to roll out the green carpet in style without the booze. Welcome to the show, Rachel.
Thanks so much for having me, and what an intro.
You know what? I had to go fabulous today, and I want to say, am I the only one wearing green?
No, I have green.
You do have some green.
Yeah.
Okay, what's up? What's up with this, guys, first of all? What's up with the non-green participation? Anyway, welcome to the show. So glad to have everybody. Look, the focus of this is getting through, obviously, sober, but also having some fun here. I'd like to open it up, you know, go to you, Kevin. You've got long-term sobriety, and you have the most Irish name of anyone on the panel, Kevin Michael O'Malley. How in the heck do you do it? How do you stay sober if you're an alcoholic during St. Patrick's Day, especially if you have a name like that?
Thanks, Damon. Yeah, I just had 35 years sober, and you know, the way you do it is you step back into the we. It's really important to remember, and this is something that I always talk about in AA and anywhere in my corporate work. It's always about the we. All 12 steps in AA and all other 12-step programs are always in the plural form. It's always about we. We admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. That's the first step in AA. So the way you do it is not be alone. The way you do it is for me, I used to go to the bars in Norton, Sam. I got... My whole rise and fall as an alcoholic was in North Beach in San Francisco. And I would be in the bars, and I would be it would be like the anti-Cheers. I'd be there, I'd walk in. My best friend was the head bartender at a little bar called Specs in North Beach. And his name was Kent McCarthy. I'm Kevin O'Malley. I'd walk in and say, O'Malley, you swine. And I would call him Pagliacci because of the Tears of the Clown. And we would, you know, and we'd drink and we'd be together. And you know, I mean, he ended up dying. After I got sober, I was you're sober. He was found dead in a hotel room of a heroin overdose while his wife and kids were at home on Christmas Eve. So that the reality is we do it together. We do it. We step out of the me. I step out of the Kevin Michael O'Malley boy genius from North Beach and into the we of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I become part of the group. I think it's really important that you find places to be with other people. If you're in AA, you go to Alcathons, you step up your meetings. If there's nothing going on, you create something. And this is a really important point that I wanted to make. I was talking about this with my wife this morning. My wife is 37 years sober. We actually met in AA, and we both were kind of co-sponsors for Damon when he was brand new 30 years ago. But if you don't have a place to go, create a place. And my very first year, I was a year and 2 months sober, and I had gone to a Celtic group in an AA group in the Inner Richmond in San Francisco, where all the Irish bars are. It's where I used to go to drink and be Kevin Michael O'Malley, get free drinks and charm girls and everything with that. And dance on bars, and I went to an AA meeting there called the Celtic Group, and I went there and I met a guy. My name's Kevin Michael O'Malley. His name is Kevin Michael Sullivan, and he had 6 months less than me. Our first year, he put a party on, and it ended up only being he and I and his daughter Aislinn. And we had the best time, and we would continue that tradition of having a St. Patrick's Day party. And it was a sober party with sober beverages. You create your own fun. It goes all the way back to Bill and Bob in 1935 in Akron, Ohio. They had a bassist from the Oxford group, but they created their own thing. And you have to be willing to create your own fun and not rely, but go to
Love
Alcathon,
that.
go to the meetings, but create your own fun.
I like the we aspect of that, Kevin, because I think it's super important because one of the things that we know about addiction is it's lonely, right? There's a lot of loneliness in addiction. And it's difficult, especially if you're newly sober, to kind of plug in and to create that we. You know, Sean, I want to go to you and ask you a question about this whole idea of triggers and holidays. You know, I know for me, St. Patrick's Day, I was a couple blocks away from Kevin. And while he was sober, actively drinking XPEX, right? So at that bar. So, you know, there's so many triggers around holidays. How do you start to identify that you're getting triggered and could relapse or end up drinking, you know, during a holiday event like this?
Real quick, just to expand on your guys' conversation. You know, a lot of times to the connection, what do we become connected to? Typically our substance or our substance of choice, and to shift over, right, and lose that with people. And really we can look, the basic building block of human condition is connection, right? And it is to be connected in one way or another, one form or another. And so I love this idea of we, and I think this comes into play too, to answer your question, Damon, is collectively, right? Can we have the conversations and start getting some dialogue around what does that look like, sound like, feel like? Allow ourselves the time and the space, right, to look back internally, to say, what are those things? Where do I feel that at? Can I check into my body? Mindfulness is something that's becoming very much more popular. I spent time in Southeast Asia. It was a lot more prevalent there when I was living off in the Far East and Southeast Asia. It's becoming more popular here. Can I check into myself in the present moment? What am I feeling? What am I thinking? Can I interact with my feelings in a way that tells me this is information? It allows me to know, how can I interact with my environment? That's a really healthy way for us to maybe pull away from the fear. Or, man, I don't know about y'all, how many times, right, have we felt something really difficult and we're gonna just run away from it as quickly as we can? Run to the bottle, right? Run to the substance. Even other forms of unhealthy coping and sex and gambling and spending, right, in that regard. And so I think really it starts with, can we slow it down, right? And really check in with ourselves. We is a great way to do that. Can we start have conversations with other people that are maybe experiencing it in the same way, and or come into the therapy office, right? That's certainly something that we'll talk about in that regard. And checking in with the body, checking in with the mind. What are those thoughts? What are those triggers? How am I interacting with this environment, right? And how does it make me feel? And then I can make an informed decision without letting it control us.
You know, I love that. I love how you're focusing on the mindfulness of it all, because it seems to me, you know, we talk about this in a lot on the Recovered Life show, that when people relapse, after you kind of dissect that, it really is they're in the future or they're in the past. They're never really in the moment. You know, in the moment, typically everything is okay. But what are some strategies, Sean, if you find yourself future tripping, you know, in regret during, because holidays do this, they trigger things for people where they'll have regret or they'll have resentments. How do you pull yourself back into the present?
You know, and that's meditation 101, right? Our mind's gonna wander. Right. And it's not about our mind wandering. It's about coming back to our mechanism, coming back to that present moment. Depression lies in the past. anxiety lies in the future. Mindfulness lies in the present, right? And can we find ourselves in a space where we, like you identified, can be present focused, because maybe the present isn't as bad as we're making it out to be when we look at the polls. I think first and foremost, right, the preparation of that, right? Can we identify those triggers beforehand? Can we have those conversations where it becomes more prevalent and more present focused to allow us to identify them? I think that's first and foremost. What are some things that might come up? What are some things that could be very difficult? What are some things utilizing the past and the future in a way that helps us, encourages us, right? And having, those conversations, to go back to the we pieces, those are things that we'll certainly have in the therapy room, but can certainly happen in other ways, shapes, and forms as well. I think the preparation piece is certainly there. Things like, when I was first really wanting to shift into more of a healthy lifestyle, I have a rubber band that would snap me back into it, right? I would flip the rubber band when I started feeling that type of way, because I knew I needed to shift out of it. I needed to run out of there. I couldn't stay in there. A lot of times I would maybe, oh, I can do it. I'd have that pride piece come into play. I don't know if any of you guys have interacted with that or not. For me, I needed to snap back into reality. And so there's, of course, unique ways that can allow us, once we do identify, what are those things that are going to be triggering? Where are those conversations? Where are those environments that can potentially put us in a just a already potentially untoward situation where maybe we need to get out of here?
You know, Rachel, I want to pivot to you real quick, because one of the things that was huge with St. Patrick's Day for me was I got sober in my mid-20s. So it was like, okay, well, that's it. My life's over. I actually like St. Patrick's Day, although I'm not Irish at all. I loved it. And getting sober in San Francisco and drinking in San Francisco, that was a huge community it was a very, very big deal, as it is in New York. I thought, that's it, man. My life is over. I'm never really going to have fun again. And I have to be honest, St. Patrick's Day was a struggle for many years for me. How do you go about recreating that day and unpinning alcohol from it?
Yeah, I mean, I think the first thing, though, I want to address is my first time when I was sober going through St. Patrick's Day, I did not go out. I didn't go and celebrate the holiday. I stayed in and I hibernated, and I really just took care of myself, because I think when you're really early on in your recovery, don't tempt yourself. Don't go out and be somewhere where there's alcohol. Don't try to do the things you used to do in the past, because if you only have a few months under your belt, that's like playing with fire, especially for a holiday that centers around alcohol. So my biggest advice is, if you only have a few months of sobriety, do not go and try to go to the party. Don't try to go to the bar. Take this day as a day to maybe do some self-care, to maybe do something just to like fill your cup up. So that's just the first thing I wanted to say. But after that, once you feel like you can be around maybe the alcohol or the party, I think it's okay to go and try to explore and maybe meet new people. But I don't know how I feel about necessarily going and sitting in a dark dive bar, which is what I used to do here in New York City. Maybe I'll find like a fun outdoor activity where I can meet people and it's not centered around drinking. But I think, you know, there's so many other things that we can do. And this holiday isn't just about alcohol, right? So maybe we can go and watch the parade, be there in person and watch a parade. Maybe we can go and move our bodies and step out of our comfort zone in a way that we don't usually do. So I think there's ways that we can still enjoy, you know, St. Patrick's Day and holidays that really do center around alcohol without having to literally be around the alcohol.
Well, I know one of the things for me that kind of replaced, and I'm sure it's not super healthy, was the food. Like, I love eating. So corned beef and cabbage is always fun. And it's kind of a tradition. And as long as I don't go overboard, I go with that. But I love what you're saying, Rachel, about creating these new experiences, right? I'd like to open it up here, to all of you, about this whole idea of creating these new experiences during St. Patrick's Day, and also knowing when maybe you're a little bit too much in front of your skis, right? Like, you're a little, like Rachel's talking about tempting fate. I'm a big one on that. Like, don't put yourself in this situation, right? Like, how did you all judge that, or with clients judge what's not safe and safe?
Well, I just tell you a story for me about what not to do. So learning from my experience of 35 being, we used to call it old timers. Now that I've been sober 35 years, we call it long timers. So old timers doesn't work anymore. Long timers. But my very first year, I had crashed and burned. I had been evicted from my apartment. I had been woke up in General Hospital in San Francisco under restraints, out of my mind. Severe alcohol withdrawal, acute amphetamine psychosis, great big bandage on my head, and I went from there into a 28-day program at the hospital. From there, I moved into a halfway house. I moved into the halfway house on March 16th, the day before St. Patrick's Day, and because I'm Kevin Michael O'Malley, I still went back to the bar on St. Patrick's Day. So I went back to my home neighborhood in North Beach, my home bar, Specs, with Kent McCarthy, the bartender. And I went back there just to show them how well I was doing. And I ended up meeting a girl, hanging out with her, having to take a cab back to the halfway house, outside making out with her, having to decide, do I blow it in this halfway house because this cute girl is here, or do I go in and choose my sobriety? Because she was visiting from, I think from St. Louis. And I went in. I said goodnight to her and I went in. But that's not the way to stay sober. That is not a good idea. Going back to your old haunts to prove you're still sober. I'd go back to those bars in North Beach. Hey, Kevin, are you still on the wagon? And I would try to explain to them that I was in recovery, but they didn't care. They didn't know it. But I think what was said a few minutes ago about don't tempt fate. You don't have to go and prove anything. I wanted to prove to them how sober I was, and I wanted to not be missing it. And I'm not missing anything. And it says in the big book, we can go anywhere if we have a reason to be there, even old-fashioned whoopee parties. Now, and I don't even know exactly what a whoopee party is, but it's okay to go see music. It's okay, but take your time. There's no rush, and always have a backup plan. Always have a sponsor to call, friends to call, have money for a cab if you go with somebody else. Have an exit strategy. That would be what I would say. Make sure that you find fun things to do, but don't go back to bars right away. If there's music, but don't go back to your old, really run down, seedy place like I did. Go to a nice, happy place. Go outside and enjoy it. And have a therapist on call, have your sponsor on call. Have both people with a lot of time that you can call, and your own sober posse that are people who came in at the same time as you, that you're all in it together.
I love that. And I just wanted to add something too from your conversation earlier of like when you're feeling maybe bad or, regret from the past. What I tend to do is I try to go immediately to a place of gratitude because, obviously beating ourselves up about stuff we did in the past is not going to do anything to the present. But instead of just sitting there, I try to at least find things I'm grateful for in this moment. And things that I'm grateful for that have changed since whatever I'm thinking about for those regretful situations. And if that really is still doesn't work, I get out and I just start walking and moving my body. And that always makes me feel better, whether it's the endorphins or the movement, it helps me, like you said, with the rubber band, literally snap out of that state that I'm feeling. So those are my two biggest pieces of advice too. If you're feeling any type of way, move the body and do some gratitude.
We always do shift in the therapy room. How do I shift out of this piece, whether it be even outside of the substance use, right? And if we're in those types of head spaces, which of course those head spaces, right, that's a trigger, right, for us to maybe go back down those paths or to enter into some essence of unhealthy coping, right? Can I find a way to shift? If I tell you not to look at the dartboard behind me, right, that you're going to think about the dartboard. If you tell you to leave the room, right, now we're able to shift out of it in a way that's going to be maybe a lot more helpful, supportive, and encouraging to get out of whatever headspace, trigger, urge, right? Damon, to use that type of language that you utilized earlier. Essentially, even right from my perspective, re-traumatizing. Right, allows us to get back into those spaces that it might foster something that's a memory, right? Maybe there's a feeling, maybe it's more bodily, right? That encourages us to want to go back to something that we know that challenges our values, our morals, our character. Yeah, not who we want to
Absolutely,
be.
Sean. Absolutely. And you know, and I think one of the things that has been mentioned here is the having of the plan. Like each of you in different ways talk about this bigger plan. And one of the things that I found that would get me into trouble, get me into situations where I shouldn't really be there, was not having a firm plan. And I felt that I have this, you know, for whatever reason, have that guilt gene sometimes that we'd be put in. So if I made a commitment to do something, then I felt obligated to do it. So I love this, you know, creating this sober plan and then committing to that early. And then once I commit to that, it takes out the anxiety and this whole ADHD side of it, of like, well, now what am I going to do? This impulse side, right? If I already kind of know what the plan is, it's much easier for me to kind of live that plan out as opposed to making a bad decision based on impulse.
Always need a plan. And I always tell people, if you are in early sobriety and you are going somewhere, what are you going to say to people? Are you going to say you just don't drink? You're not drinking right now. Like, have that nailed down. What are you going to say if they question you? Where are you going to go if you need to make a quick exit, right? Like, did you drive there? Did you take an Uber? How are you getting out? What are you going to drink too? Like, having that nailed down before you go. Are you just sticking to water? Are you going to have non-alcoholic beer? Are you going to have seltzer? Just like having that decided before you get somewhere, so you don't have to have the anxiety, right? And the impulse decisions. That is so key. Like, what time are you going to go home? Like, do you need to have an excuse so people don't try to drag you out to the bars if you're going to a house party? Like, having those things nailed down ahead of time can really like save you from places you don't want to go.
And we'll role play that in the therapy session in the office, right? If we know this is something that's pertinent, it's coming up, it's something that's really important to us.
You're talking about like making these plans and role playing and kind of doing all this other kind of stuff regarding making the commitment, right? Like, I know there's a lot of people that listen to the Recovered Life show. Some people are, they've already identified as an alcoholic. They've already said, look, I'm an alcoholic. I'm in recovery. It's a little bit more of a straight line. But there are people who maybe they haven't. They're trying it out. They're going to see, hey, you know, I'm kind of, alcohol hasn't been great for me. I don't really know if I'm an alcoholic because it could be confusing, you know, in early sobriety, trying to kind of sift that through. What I want to ask you is, I think that there's a lot of thinking that everybody's going to be talking and thinking about us not drinking. And unless you put yourself in a situation like going to that dive bar, right? Or going to that place where it was all about drinking, most people aren't thinking about you. And Ed, you're 35 years of recovery. Have you found that most people aren't thinking whether you're drinking or not at an event?
Oh yeah, definitely. And I think you just at a certain point, you have to, all the things that were said, having a strategy. Have if you go to an AA meeting or you go on Amazon, there's a wonderful AA book called Living Sober, and you can get that book at any AA meeting. You can buy it on Amazon. It's actually tips about how to be at a party. It's about tips how to use AA. Have when you get there, as was mentioned, get a drink. Have your own drink ready. Have your excuse. Have and then just have fun. You know, the biggest thing is to not stress and to just go there and be just be another person, not be the guy that's really stressed out. But I would say the most important thing is to relax, have fun, but don't let someone else give you a drink for sure. Have your own drink, have control your own space, have your exit plan, have your money for or your be ready for to take an Uber, be ready to go. But I would say that the most important thing is to remember that nobody really cares. You know, you think you're the most important person at the event. You're not. Nobody really cares. So just have fun. And you know, really, that's the biggest thing I can say. The way you get sober is your life is really shit. It's no fun at all. But the way you stay sober is by having fun. The way you stay sober is by, it says in the big book, we're not a glum lot. We absolutely insist on having fun, and we do. And if you don't have fun, you're not going to stay sober. But you know, when I got sober, there were lots of AA events. There were sober dances. There were all kinds of parties that would go on, and they don't happen as much anymore. And it's kind of awkward. I mean, being 6 months sober, going to a sober dance, and you don't know how to talk to girls when you're sober, and you don't know what to do. And they're actually fun. And I would recommend, if you're just looking, am I sober? Am I not sober? Am I an alcoholic? Well, there are plenty of open AA meetings that you can go to just to start to learn about things. The only requirement for AA membership is a desire to stop drinking. There's no definition. It's not like getting booked in at the police station. You just it's what you choose to do. So it and really, when you and I got sober, it was a lot hard. I mean, we had to have a clear bottom. I had lots of blood, eviction, general hospital, out of my mind, under restraints. You don't have to have that. When AA first started in 1935, it was all older men with very low bottoms, lost everything. Later on, it changed. Later on, lots of young people come into AA now, very young, and maybe never even drank that much at all. Mostly did drugs. But it doesn't have to be hardcore like the old days. You don't have to lose everything. You can, it's a choice. So, and we're very happy to have you at an AA meeting. If you're just trying to figure things out, just come to a meeting and say hello. And that's, it's always open. It's always ready for at any level of what we call a bottom. If your bottom is losing everything like I did, hey, come on in. If your bottom is, well, I think maybe it's just a few too many beers at night, and I don't feel good the next day, or I don't like who I am, that's fine too. Just come. I mean, it's like Rumi, the Sufi poet says, come, come, whoever you are. And that's what AA is about.
I love that. Guys, if anybody would like to join in here and really kind of discuss, also the mental health aspect of it. I love Kevin's pitch for 12-step groups, and I do think it's changed a lot. I will tell you, when I met Kevin, he had 5 years sober, I had no sobriety. It was much of a harder place, 12-step groups. It was much more. You had to qualify a lot more. What I love about sobriety now is that, just kind of like he said, it's much more open. It doesn't have to be the last stop on the last house on the block, as they used to say. Because a lot of people have a lot of different things going on, and sometimes alcoholism and drug addiction is part of it, right, Sean? Other times it's a mental health issue that's also kind of encompassing this whole thing as well, in addition to addiction.
Yeah, well, a great question. I'll ask, is this causing a problem in your life, in some way, shape, or form? And if the answer is yes, then we need to make a change. And so, whether we want to say, I have dependence issues, I have addiction, right? All the labels, if you're answering yes to that problem, let's find a way to implicate some change. And from my perspective, and again, I don't want to over, arching umbrella of this is, if you are coming in with some essence of a concern that's more externalized, like a substance use, it's to me unhealthy coping. Again, that's from a trauma perspective. What happened to you that I'm now utilizing this resource in a way? I don't call it a resource, right? It's unhealthy, it's consequential, it's problematic. And I've too have been there in that regard. My life is so hard, it's so difficult, right? That I'm going to choose this immediacy, right? And sacrifice that over things that provide me meaning and purpose in life, right? And so, of course, want to make sure that we identify those things in the moment that can help us, right, to quiet that, right, to find those healthier methods, the mindfulness piece, as we talked about earlier. But from my perspective, I want to get underneath of that, right? Uproot the weed, to some degree, if that's a metaphor that works for you. What happened? Why did we go to substance use to allow for some sense of purpose, meaning, and fulfillment, to get away? Maybe it's not even it provides us meaning, purpose, and fulfillment, but it distracts us enough from the things that are hurting us. That the pain typically starts off mental and emotional, right? And can certainly be physical as well. And the more and more we cope from a mental and emotional perspective, it will become physical, right? And then it'll really stretch the dependence piece. how do we get underneath of that? And that's the mental health and the emotional health perspective. Viktor Frankl came up with logos therapy. Can we find meaning and purpose in our lives? And if we can do that, why can we find a way to shift out of needing substances to exist in the way that maybe they once have in our lives?
I love that. I love that. I think utilizing everything that's available to you is so important. And that's why I wanted to kind of put together a panel like this. You know, I have to ask you, Rachel, you know, you've had a big shift. You're a very social person. If there was anything going on that I want to know about, I would call you, right? Because you know what's going on. You're very plugged in, right? How was the shift for you into sobriety from the life that you had that was very alcohol and substance centric? And I know there's other things that you've shared on previous episodes about ADHD and dealing with that whole thing. How has been the shift? What have you noticed from the shift with your own perspective about now pursuing sobriety, going through things like St. Patrick's Day?
I mean, I would say that I think back to old St. Patrick's days before, from the before days, and I don't even remember them. Like they're mostly just blank, like blurs of alcohol, of other substances. And, you know, I knew though back then that I had to get sober, and I would beat myself up. I wanted to drink, but then I would regret it. I knew I wasn't ready. And now I think I just, honestly, I don't celebrate St. Patrick's Day now. I don't really feel the need to want to go out and celebrate a holiday that really just glamorizes drinking, when I think that that is probably it's the antithesis now of what I want to do. But it took me a while to get here. And, you know, I definitely think the first year or two, I did kind of have FOMO. I did kind of feel like I was missing out. But I had to really understand why did I think that? And like you were just saying, like, why was I drinking? And yes, and I think there were a lot of reasons I was drinking, which were trauma, childhood things, but also mainly my ADHD, which really caused me to search for dopamine anywhere I could get it. It still does that. I haven't figured out the how to get away from that. But I find ways to give myself healthy dopamine, whether that's from moving my body outside in nature or journaling or, you know, listening to music. Like, there are ways to get the dopamine that don't numb you and poison you and then make you, you know, black out and do dumb stuff. So that definitely is probably the biggest shift, I would say. But yeah, I mean, I really think sometimes it's time. And, you know, sorry, I was also on what you guys were just talking about. I posted something recently on Instagram about just my journey and, you know, addiction and recovery, because I was in Florida visiting my grandparents. And someone commented being like, I look at all your posts and it seems like you had so much love and so many great people in your life. I just don't understand then how you became an alcoholic. And they actually said it, like, I'm not trying to be mean, but, and it was definitely negative. And I posted the comment and I got a lot of people's reactions and responses. And I really wanted to open up that conversation. Like, do you have to necessarily have all these traumatic things happen to you to become addicted to an addictive substance? Like, does that have to happen? And I mean, for me, I did have things happen that I can pinpoint, but other people were commenting saying they had the best parents, the best lives, nothing bad happened to them, and they still found themselves dealing with addiction. So I think that that's just something important to note. Anyone listening, you don't have to call yourself an alcoholic to stop drinking. You just don't. You can just decide it's not serving you anymore. You like your life better without alcohol. You don't want to poison yourself. You also don't have to necessarily, you don't have to have a rock bottom. You don't have to pinpoint one thing. Maybe you did have this amazing life and amazing family and nothing really happened to you, but you still found yourself struggling with substances. That's totally possible. And maybe it does go back to mental health. Maybe there is something you're not diagnosed with. Whatever it is, it's okay to just say, I'm done with the alcohol. I don't need the labels and I don't want this as, for my life anymore.
Yeah, I love that. You know, I think, you know, my view has changed a lot on this, you know, coming from a 12-step background where it was very definitive. And for me, I needed that definitive because, you know, I am an alcoholic. I'm somebody that physically, when it goes into my body, something happens that I can't explain. So, you know, for me, I cannot drink alcohol. And what I have, I define as alcoholism, right? But I do think that it's positive now that we have this bigger discussion. And one of the reasons why I wanted to do this is a bigger discussion about people jumping off the train. Because for many of us, the train went to too many stops. And we know through alcoholism and just, alcohol use disorder, drug addiction with fentanyl out right now and not knowing the amount, the dosage, and all the dangers that are out there in the world, plus other people who suffer from other mental health addictions and are on medications and are mixing this now, that the getting off the train earlier is going to be better, right? Like not having to define St. Patrick's Day as your bottom, because I know there's a lot of people, I know a lot of people, St. Patrick's Day was their bottom. They woke up the next day, that was it for them because they had consequences that were big, right? Like you don't have to have these major consequences to pursue a sober life. Whether you decide that you want to be an alcohol, that you're an alcoholic, like I've decided, or not. And I love that, and that's one of the reasons why I want to do this is to educate it. And also too, I have found in my own personal experience of working with other alcoholics that, the sooner that somebody realizes that their activity as far as drinking and using drugs isn't like their fellows, whether or not they decide at that point that they are going to get sober, and maybe they do it 20 years later, I know that that seed grows in their mind. And I have seen people wake up 20 years later and say, I had the solution back then. I have an alcohol problem, right? And I'm gonna deal with this, and I'm gonna get some, right? So I think that this is such a great conversation. I'd like to end this panel here, just kind of opening it up. Kevin, we'll start with you. Any last things that you'd like to say about staying sober, St. Patrick's Day, this whole sober journey? And then we'll just go around and we'll end it.
Sure, I have a couple of things to say. I was making some notes while you were talking. One thing I want to point out, as being someone who is a purebred Irish Catholic, in Ireland, St. Patrick's Day never was a big outdoor drinking holiday. I mean, Irish people drink. I mean, there's no doubt about it. And drinking is at the center of Irish culture. But having the special party day does not happen in Ireland. In Ireland, St. Patrick's Day used to be a day that you'd go to church. Now it's adopted the American thing, but I was telling you about my friend, my partner in crime, Kent McCarthy, who was my bartender and my partner in crime, and I've got some great stories about him. But he had a roommate who was also Irish, a guy named Sean. They went to, and he was sober 25 years. So McCarthy was still drinking. Sean and he went to Ireland. He sent me a postcard. I was in recovery already, living in a halfway house. He sent me a postcard. Says, "O'Malley, you swine! Half of Ireland is in AA, the other half is drunk. I don't know which is more annoying." And that gives you some insight. I do want to say, for me though, the great thing about going to an AA meeting, going to therapy, going to any kind of support group, is finding other people who think the same way you do. And for me, I would say a critical component of being an alcoholic or needing to stop drinking was that I felt like there was nobody in the world that could understand how I felt. I was an only child. I spent a lot of time growing up in Europe. I felt like you could never really understand who I was. So to hell with you anyway, but let's have a few drinks. Let's finish up the coke when we're best friends for life at 7 a.m. and totally alone, totally alone. And when I got to AA, my very first meeting was in the Mission District in San Francisco, and it was a funky little clubhouse, and there were shopping carts out in front, and there was a smoking section, and 3 feet away was non-smoking. And I walked in there, and my whole life I felt like I was a Martian. My whole life I felt like you could never really understand me, like someone had snatched the Earth baby and put me in place of the Earth baby, and I looked just like him, but I was a Martian, and I never understand my feelings. And that very first meeting, it's like all the other Martians were there waiting for me, and they had Martian solutions, and that was the 12 steps up on the wall, and I got my sponsor at that meeting. And but the alcohol was the universal translator that would make everything work. But when I got after I got to AA and I worked the steps, I stepped out of that Martian thing and back into being an Earth person. And the day I did my fifth step in AA with my sponsor over in Noe Valley in San Francisco, I felt like I joined the human race again. But the most important thing is to find people who think the way you do. I would be at AA meetings, and we laugh at tragedy. The things that you couldn't tell your so-called normal friends about, we laugh at in AA because we've all been through it and we got out the other side. In the big book, it talks about where people who have been like drowning men in the lifeboat together. We never would have found each other except through AA. And then we have that bond together. You and I still have that bond 30 years later. And so find people who can understand you. Find people who've had the experiences you do that you never thought you could talk about unless you were really drunk or really high or trying to impress some girl. But find people that can talk and you feel comfortable to share and you feel safe to share and you feel like you can honestly be yourself and have fun. And you don't have to celebrate St. Patrick's Day, but celebrate life.
Love this. Sean, to you, final thoughts?
Kevin, love the connection piece, how integral that is. We call it incongruence of self, right? When how I see myself and how others see me are unaligned. Boy, when we can co-align those things, that feels pretty safe and secure. And like you said, I love how you phrased the metaphor of the Martians. Fantastic, right? And how I felt now, hey, I feel connected again. And I feel like myself for maybe the first time ever. Pretty liberating to some degree. One thing that I'd like to bring it to, Damon, something that you alluded to is that, hey, St. Patrick's Day ha has been, again, trauma therapist, traumatized, it's re-traumatizing. Right, because of maybe some of the things that I've done. And I want to just offer this support and validation for anybody that connects with that. We are not our past behaviors, and those don't have to define us. And Rachel, you identified gratitude and thankfulness, being intentional, right, with maybe some of the changes that you've made, being intentional, celebrating the wins throughout our journey, right? Because we know life's pretty good at handing out L's. Right, especially when we're stuck in our substance use and our dependency and our addictions. And so, can we celebrate those wins when they come? And here's another St. Patrick's Day that's come and gone, and I stayed sober. And can we celebrate that and spend time toward it? We say spend time in the tough stuff, right? In therapy, you know what? Spend time in the wins and the things that feel good, so that we can, increase those concepts of self and how we do feel about ourselves.
Love that. Thank you so much for those tips. Those are great. Rachel, to you, final thoughts here, St. Patrick's Day.
Yeah, I mean, I love what you were just saying, Sean. And I think that when we are looking back on the past and being re-traumatized, I also like to tell myself a past version of me would have given anything to be where I am right now. So stop thinking about what's happening in the future. Like, just be so grateful that we're in recovery, that we're not that person anymore. And you're right, like, our past does not define who we are today. And I think that's something that we all just need to remember every single day. But I would also say that if you are feeling any type of way, social media has a lot of negative sides, but there are a lot of positive sides now in terms of the recovery space and finding people that do maybe get you. So for my social media page, I only follow sober accounts and positive, uplifting accounts where I can go and scroll and see memes that I'm like, oh my gosh, are they in my head? Like, how did they? And I really identify. So there's a way to find that connection and that community online. So don't be scared to go onto the sober Instagram side of the world and message someone, DM them, make some friends. Like, almost all of my sober friends that I have now in New York City, I met because of Instagram or at a sober event because here in New York City. And don't be scared to kind of search for sober events in where you live. Like, there actually are a lot more popping up every day. There are sober bars now where you can go and hang out. I mean, they're actually opening all over the country. So there are different things that you can do to step out of your comfort zone and still have fun and meet new fun people. So don't be scared to push the comfort zone because that's how we grow and change and learn.
Kevin, Sean, and Rachel, thank you so much for joining us today. Guys, if you're listening to this out there and you are struggling, if you're thinking you can't do it, I think this episode is a testament that you can. You can stay sober during St. Patrick's Day and use all the resources that we Mentioned here, connecting with the group, kind of knowing when you're going to come and go places, having that plan, and then being really present, in which I think is a really great takeaway is like being present in what you're doing and where you're at. Guys, thank you so much for joining us today for this special episode, and we really appreciate all of your time.
Thanks, Damon.
Sometimes addiction recovery can be a lonely battle, but you don't have to fight it alone. At Recovered Life, we're dedicated to helping you live your best recovered life. And that's why we're inviting you to subscribe to our free weekly newsletter. Every week, we carefully curate exclusive content from leading minds in addiction recovery, mental health, and all things important to the recovery lifestyle. Stay in the know with the latest news about addiction and get exclusive invitations to special recovery-focused events and explore insights tailored to support recovery from alcoholism, drug addiction, codependency, disordered eating, dysfunctional family dynamics, gambling, and so much more. With our newsletter, each week becomes an opportunity for growth, healing, and taking a step closer to the life you deserve. Take your first step towards a brighter future today. Go to recoveredlife.us and subscribe for free. Sign up now at recoveredlife.us. Dot us.